All right, welcome back. It is a Tuesday. Pinder and Steinberg live from the Better Business Bureau Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Flames prospects. Oilers prospects. $5, $5, $5 tonight. That's just a 7 o'clock puck drop. Not far away. Let's get to our NHL insider, Chris Johnston. Sir, let's start with what the latest is on the Falk, Kasha, Ducks, Hurricanes entanglement. We have a deal, or do we have a deal, I wonder? I guess that lies in Falk's camp.
Yeah, and that's still where it stands, at this point, is Justin Falk has to decide if he will put Anaheim on the list of teams that he's able to be traded to. I understand there's been at least some level of conversation about the possibility of an extension for him because he is a pending UFA after this season. And, until he makes some kind of decision here, I guess it's a little bit up in the air, but I think it's fair to say at this point that he's likely to be moved because there are other teams with some interest. And I think when you go down this road, much as the Leafs did with Nazem Kadri, prior to his deal to Colorado, once you've asked a guy to waive his no trade, even if he doesn't, I think it's difficult to resume that relationship. So, we wait to see what he does with Anaheim, but even if that trade doesn't go through, I wouldn't be surprised if we did see him moved here in the coming days.
Well, that and you mix in the fact that, Brett Pesce has emerged and been committed to long-term. Jake Gardner's just inked a four-year pact at a reasonable rate that he also, is a guy that's been a top four guy the bulk of his career. Hamilton and Slavin was the top pair for the bulk of last year. Like, he's just not in their plans. So I think we all would expect the move. Now, as for this modified no trade, it's a 15-team list. How much is this going to get in the way?
Well, I do think there are other teams that aren't on his list that are at least still in this to some degree. And so, it's in the way right now because Anaheim is a team the Hurricanes have reached a tentative deal with. And, it's a tough spot for Falk. Look, you're right. He recognizes he's not in their plans, that a change is coming. But, for him to potentially give up the right to go to free agency next year is a tough decision. And it's not just, do I want to live in Anaheim or play for the Ducks this year? I think part of what he's going through is figuring out if he signs an extension with that team now and foregoes his opportunity to be a free agent. And so, that one isn't as cut and dried. And you mentioned Jake Gardner there. His experience wasn't great as a free agent, but generally it is a place where guys get paid. Falk's a right shot defenseman, been in the league a long time. I think that he's a candidate to be a pretty good free agent, have some pretty intriguing options next summer if he does decide to go through with that. So I think that's a little bit where it's hung up at this point. But, I don't think it's a case where he won't be traded just because there are 15 teams that he can't have any say in the trade to. And I do think there's sufficient enough interest league-wide that one of the teams from that spot will make a move for him if it's not the Ducks.
We've had some good chats around the station with numerous different people over the last, 12 months on exactly where the Anaheim Ducks are at. They were ravaged by injury last year. I believe they had almost 20 rookies that suited up last year. They've got 2 years left on Ryan Getzlaff, their captain, who's already 34, but they also have a 26-year-old John Gibson who may, you could certainly build the case, be the best netminder in the NHL, and the likes of Steele, Terry, Zegras, Jones, Gooley, and others on the way. What is their MO in terms of rebuilding, retooling, being competitive, and where do you see the club right now?
Well, it's a bit of an unknown quantity just because all those guys you mentioned. I mean, for sure they're going to be giving more minutes to the young guys. Max Comtois, another player that they feel very good about, got a little time with them last year. And, I just don't know how it's all going to come together. You have a new coach. He's not new to the organization in Dallas Eakins, but, still a degree of unpredictability with how that mix will be there. But, where I think they're at in the big picture is, they've committed, I don't know how much they've said publicly, but quietly to a rebuild, and they've already sort of been doing that. I mean, through various ways that they've shuttled out, Corey Perry with his buyout, obviously Ryan Kessler's situation, he's done as an NHL player, Kevin Bieksa. I mean, a lot of the sort of veteran, strong voices that they've had for the last number of years are slowly being pushed away. And they're trying to make room for the young guys to come up. And, you know, bring forth a new era. And so, you know, I think that this year they'll be better than they were last year. You know, that's not saying a whole lot. It was a really tough season there last year. But, you know, how good they can be, I think, is sort of the question that we'll have to watch play out, because it really is contingent on how impactful guys like Troy Terry, Sam Steele, and Comtois can be right away, because there's definitely going to be minutes for them. And you know, they're going to need some of those guys to boost their scoring, just because, you know, there's only a couple trusty veterans still there in Getzlaff and Ricard Raquel and the like.
As for the swap itself, are you under the impression this is one for one, or there'd be other assets we haven't heard about that would be involved if Falk were to waive his no move?
My impression is it's one for one in terms of the main pieces. I mean, there might be ancillary draft picks that aren't, you know, too impactful on it, but, you know, I think the trade is largely built around those two guys. You know, Kasha's an interesting player. He's, you know, really been a bit of a stats darling the last number of years, and, you know, even some of his more obvious stats, the counting stats, have been good, but, you know, he was injured for much of last season. So, you know, I think there's a question in terms of where he's at with his health, or, you know, with the fact that Anaheim may be willing to move off him, you know, could suggest there's some concern there. But, you know, it sort of fits with a Carolina team that has Eric Tolsky in the front office, one of the, you know, real pioneers of the stats movement online before he got hired there, who has, you know, increasing, I think, influence on the decisions they're making, that they would be bringing in another analytic-friendly player. And you know, we'll just have to see where things end up, because certainly I don't think that Cash is guaranteed to be moved if this particular transaction doesn't come together.
Okay, let's move along. Pavel Zacha and the Devils, just what, a day after reports he'd signed in the KHL. Well, those proved erroneous. He's now signed with the Devils, 3 years, $6.75 million. Where are these two at, and was the threat of the K the little bit that of pressure or leverage that the player had that needed to get this over the hill?
Well, now I can figure why Patrick Steffen, his agent, wasn't answering his calls yesterday, because evidently he didn't want to address those rumors head on, because I think they were just that, rumors. And then clearly some frustration got into this negotiation. You know, it's obviously a little different than a lot of the guys we've talked about throughout the summer and the last couple of weeks here, in that, you know, he's not a player that's had, you know, a tremendously strong start to his career, especially for how high a pick he was. You know, the Devils feel he's made some progress and they're, you know, pretty bullish on his future, but, you know, I don't think that they quite understood, you know, how long it took to get it done. Some of the threats that were going back and forth there, with the possibility of him even playing the ECHL and then the KHL. You know, ultimately things came to a head yesterday when, you know, that report came out. I saw that Ray Shiro, the Devils GM, spoke to reporters in Buffalo at the junior tournament there, and, you know, had some choice words for the player. And, you know, I think, you know, eventually some cooler heads prevailed. They reached a 3-year deal, and, you know, he's going to get a chance now, I think, to be an important part of that team. You know, that they're another team, much, you know, the same as the Ducks. It's kind of an intriguing team. They've made some big swings. They have some intriguing young players, and they have the number one overall pick in Jack Hughes. And so, you know, if Pavel Zacha could be a reliable, you know, second line, maybe third line player for them, I think they'll be pretty pleased. And, you know, all the kind of rumors and is he going to the KHL, I think it was all posturing. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't make sense. You know, he's making over $2 million on this contract per year. He might make that in Russia. He's got to go live in Russia. He's not playing the best league in the world. You know, I don't think you can argue it would help his development and put him in a better place to be an NHL player down the road. So I think the right outcome came here, but certainly was more trying than the Devils expected it to be with Pavel Zacha.
Another deal with that higher third year that increases the qualifying offer. We saw that with Zach Werenski, not nearly as significant with Zacha, worth $3 million the last year and an AAV of 2.25. Werenski's was considerable, the jump from 4 to 7. And I wonder if this is a template that will help solve some of these other stalemates, or does this maybe apply more to the D-men? I don't know how much Werenski would move the forward market.
Well, you know, it's certainly consistent with what Mitch Marner has been shopping around for. You know, his camp has looked more recently at a 3-year deal. You know, I think they've even talked to some other teams still to see, you know, if there's an offer sheet and, you know, potential that if there was at a 3-year deal, you know, with an ascending pay structure would be favorable to them. You know, it sounds like Brock Besser's camp is you know, at least willing to look at a shorter term contract, and I would expect we'd be talking about a similar kind of backloaded deal rather than front loaded, as we've seen on a lot of recent contracts prior to the this recent signing period. I do think that there is a path there. You know, one thing to note, not to get too deep into the CBA on everyone, but you know, you don't actually have to qualify the guy at that rate. The team can also do a team elected salary arbitration at 85% of that. So, you know, if Werenski struggles a little bit, if he doesn't keep taking steps forward, he's a 30-point D-man or a 40-point D-man, you know, they can try to take him to ARB and request a salary of $5.95 million. So it's not a total guarantee of that $7 million, but, you know, right, obviously it does set him up to get a raise and also to walk him to free agency, because if a team does take you to ARB, it's only, you know, the player can choose a one-year agreement, and then he's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the earliest possible date. So, you know, I do think that it's a good compromise for players, especially players like Werenski, who probably aren't getting the AAV on that contract that, you know, certainly he would be getting on a longer-term deal. You know, he sacrificed some term or some dollars, but, you know, I think he gives himself a little bit more control over his next deal, puts himself in a position to, you know, if he has a strong couple of years, really hit a home run at a young age on his next contract. And, you know, it's more the traditional bridge that we used to see a lot of and had kind of been going out of style. But I would expect now, as we're, you know, really down to the wire with making training camp and now a couple of these guys signing these deals, that you will see, you know, a Provorov, maybe even a McAvoy sign a three-year contract and have similar kind of structure to what we saw in the Werenski deal.
When was the last time we saw a team ARB? Wow. I mean, I'd forgotten that was still in the CBA. In fact, I thought it might have been dinosaured in the last CBA, but it's been so long since that's been exercised. Off the top of your head, can you recall the last one that happened?
Oh, that I can't. You know, I know many years ago, the Atlanta Thrashers took Clark MacArthur to Team ARB and then walked away from the arbitration award, and that's when he signed in Toronto. You know, it hasn't happened a lot, but, you know, maybe much the way these contracts are kind of back in vogue, these things can come around and go around again. And if you're seeing more players sign 3-year deals, that kind of lines those guys up potentially for ARB if they're not able to reach a long-term extension at that point in time. And so, you know, anything's possible. At the same time, you know, the NHL and the NHLPA are currently negotiating a new CBA, and that you know, provision could be taken right out of there before we even get to 3 years down the road.
Sure. One on Marner for you, because you're real close to that. Latest reports suggested that in that structure we're talking about, the third year RFA status expiry and the big qualifying offer, that Mitch Marner was seeking something around $15 million potentially in that third year. Does Darren Ferris and Mitch Marner actually think that Mitch Marner should be the highest paid player in the NHL, which is quite likely what he could be in 3 years if he had a $15 million salary?
Well, it's hard to carve through what they believe and what they're asking for. You know, it's still a negotiation, which I think is a surprise to a lot of people. You know, I was speaking to a couple of folks who work for other teams in the Leafs today, and, you know, they were sort of remarking that they're just surprised it's still kind of in the tug back and forth stage that, you know, given how long they've been talking, everyone knows the ramifications. I'm pretty sure both sides are well versed on what the other wants, that, you know, they haven't been able to come together a little closer on reaching a deal. And so, you know, the short answer that I have for you is I don't believe the Leafs have any interest in a 3-year deal at all with Mitch Marner. I mean, maybe as an absolute last resort, something they have to sign at the end of September, early October to get him back playing games at the start of the regular season. But, you know, his camp prefers that right now. I think they see it as a way perhaps to get Mitch to earn something close to what Austin Matthews is going to earn in these 5 years out of his entry level deal by, yes, taking a little bit less on the AAV for a 3-year deal, but earning, you know, more in that third year and then in position in years 4 and 5 to make up some of the difference between those players. But, you know, I don't know how realistic it is. I mean, they've definitely talked to other teams at various points over the summer about that sort of contract. Trying to sell those teams on the idea that, you know, the Leafs won't be able to match that, or that they might not match it, that it would be a way to get Mitch Marner on an offer sheet. But, you know, no one's bitten on it so far. And to be honest, now we're at a stage where there's only so many teams out there right now that would even have the cap space to remotely entertain, you know, offer sheeting this guy. And you know, I think that the possibility of it happening is dimmed considerably, you know, with the season now here and teams having to be cap compliant here in the next few weeks, you know, meaning they can't carry, you know, an amount of money over the $81.5 million cap. You know, I think he's going to have a very difficult time getting that deal in Toronto, and you know, evidently no one else in the league is looking to give it to him either.
I would love to see the wrinkle in the plot where all these GMs, Cheveldayoff, Treliving, Dubas, Brisebois, Joe Sakic, any others I'm missing amongst this forward class, say, all right, guys, here we are in, you know, early September. Let's play hardball and make these guys sit for a month and freak out and think they might actually have to go play for like $1 million in the Swiss League. Let's really see how strong they are. But the flip side is all these agents are talking to saying all of these teams with significant RFAs, even Vancouver, are under immense pressure to win right now. Like, this really is quite the game of chicken that we're about to see. And I really don't believe the preseason is much of a pressure point for either side. It would be nice to have guys there, but we're talking about multi-year packs. So what if you miss preseason games? I don't think that matters much at all.
It doesn't, but I can say in the Marner negotiation in particular that once it gets to the season, you know, there's some real consequences to that. The Leafs are a team right now that aren't going to have any cap space at all as they enter the year. And in simple terms, you know, when you have open cap space, you accrue it day by day. So if the Flames, for example, open the season with $2 million in cap room, that grows as the season goes along. They can add a player of greater value when you get into the year. You know, this is what allowed the Leafs to sign William Nylander last year on December 1st. They won't be accruing that cap space now. And so Toronto, its position actually gets weaker in terms of signing Mitch Marner, you know, once the season begins. And so if his goal is to reach a contract with the Leafs, which, you know, I have to believe fundamentally it is, I've never heard otherwise from anyone, from him directly or anyone connected to him. But, you know, the real deadline for his contract has to be the start of the year. And if they go past that, there honestly is a doomsday scenario where the Leafs can't sign him, even if they wanted to, where another team might not offer sheet him and he might be stuck. I mean, I don't think it'll come to that, but it's a possibility in his case with the Leafs' unique cap situation. And so, you know, Thursday doesn't matter when they report for camp, but October 2nd is a huge date when it comes to the negotiations with him and the Leafs.
I almost wonder who that helps more. Like, if you're Kyle Dubas, you say, like, look, we just can't do this. Like, we literally are out of space. Here's the number you have to do to play in the NHL this year, because we're not going to trade you. We want you to be here. Here's your number, take it or leave it. Like, that whole cap pickle they're in, you could almost build the case that helps the Leafs more than helps Marner if they get beyond October 2.
I think you can. You know, I think that he's played this hand pretty deep. I won't say he's overplayed it yet, but you're getting there. I mean, it's not a similar situation where, you know, in Nylander's case, the Leafs offer did come up as time went along last year. They're just not in a position to do that. You know, I think as a result, they've been far more proactive in this negotiation. I think that they've already offered, put money on the table that they think it makes them uncomfortable, that it might be a little bit more than he's worth, but they're trying to get a deal done. And, you know, it hasn't sparked one yet. And there is a point where, you know, I think that they won't go any further. I'm not saying they'll trade him by any means. I mean, they could let him sit. Who knows how it happens? But, you know, it's going to be intriguing as we get closer to the start of the season, particularly in his case, if you know, nothing doesn't get done in the meantime.
Okay, last one for you. Just an update on the CBA. We have until September 15 for the players to open it. I don't know how much of this is posturing or how seriously they're considering reopening the CBA. Players don't usually do well against owners in these types of situations, so reopening, I would think, would be a last resort to get stuff done. What's the latest?
Well, I'm still of the opinion they're not going to, you know, bring an early termination to that agreement on Sunday. But, you know, what might be even more important is that today is a third straight business day, you know, counting last Friday, yesterday, and today, that the NHL and NHLPA have been in a room together in New York meeting and you know, continuing their CBA discussions that have gone on right through the summer. And, you know, my gut on this one tells me that they are much closer to an extension probably than may even be realized or reported elsewhere. You know, the fact that so little information is leaked out, that the people I talk to are usually far more likely to sort of indulge some of these conversations or questions, are keeping things low-key. You know, I have to believe it's a sign that there's some positive things happening behind those doors. Now, it doesn't mean an extension will be done by the weekend, but, you know, I do think as much as this is a soft deadline, quote-unquote, for the players, meaning that no matter how they vote on Saturday, there's not going to be a lockout Sunday or Monday. But, you know, there's a real serious amount of discussion going on between the league and the players about extending the CBA. And you know, until I hear something to the contrary, I just have to believe that this deal is one that's going to get done. It's going to get done probably without the threat of the lockout happening, you know, long before the CBA is due to expire. And you know, I hope my read on the situation is correct. But until I hear otherwise, I really believe that there's a lot going on behind closed doors here with these two sides, and that we're going to get a deal without a work stoppage, which, you know, I think is a positive thing for everyone in this sport.
So just to clarify, there was an opportunity for the NHL to reopen it. They did not. The players have that opportunity until the 15th. The current CBA, if neither reopens it, and we know the NHL hasn't, would expire after the 21-22 season.
Right,
you're thinking
that,
yeah, and you're thinking there's a realistic chance that there's an extension or an agreement that carries way beyond 21-22 season.
Yeah, something in you know, what I've heard is that it's 2025 is kind of what's being played around with now. You know, they're working with setting the salary cap at a certain level to try to offset some of the players' concerns about escrow, to allow for the system to catch up a little bit. And then, you know, what the league anticipates will be a windfall in 2 years when the US TV deals kick in, when Seattle joins the league and you know, potentially brings more revenue with it. And, you know, I have to believe, honestly, talking to some pretty plugged-in agents, I've talked to senior people on both sides of the union and the league, it just feels like there's a lot of momentum here. And, you know, I think the one thing this deadline does, quote-unquote deadline on Sunday for the players, is, you know, it incentivizes everyone to try to see what they can get done together before there's a vote, before there's some action, say, you know, having the CBA end a year from now. I do think that an extension is in the air, and we'll see if they can get it done this week.
Chris, great stuff. Thank you. We'll chat again on Thursday. Do appreciate it.
All right. Sounds good.